Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 162 of the Mom Hour. I'm Sarah Powers, and I am here with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
So we're doing one of our favorite things today, guys, and Woo-hoo! That is taking your listener questions and offering our solicited parenting advice.
Yes, people actually asked us for this. I have to apologize. My voice is still kind of on the mend. Like, I'm still not 100%. So if you're a new listener, I don't always sound so froggy and like sultry. Like I just had a night out at a jazz club.
It'll add a little gravitas to your answers.
I feel like I was like laying on a piano last night with like one of those long cigarette thingies coming out of my mouth, and that's why I sound like this. But actually, no, just been talking a lot and
fighting.
My kids made me sick. So,
yeah, that there happens. So we have some really good listener questions to get to today, and then we like to do these in two-part batches. So next Tuesday we will continue with some more listener questions, and we love getting your questions, so keep sending them in. We especially love when you record yourself doing that, so at the end of the show I'll remind you how to do that. But first, let's get right to our sponsor. We are excited to welcome back Canvas People. So Megan, I know that you have 10 million photos on your phone, because I know you do.
We all do.
It is a challenge for all of us to get pictures off our phone and do something, anything with them, other than maybe a little, you know, Instagramminess.
Yes.
So this is a challenge that we all have in this day and age. And I love Canvas People for this particular issue. So they print your favorite photos on Canvas and make really unique and beautiful prints.
Yeah, they do. And I have to tell you, okay, first of all, I am the worst about buying frames.
Yeah.
And then even when I own the frames, I'm the worst about getting pictures in the frames.
Or changing them.
Changing them out or hanging them. Like, I just feel like it's this big process, right? So when we started working with Canvas People, like, I have a lot of really nice pictures. I have a nice phone on my camera, or my camera on my phone. My camera does not have a phone on it, but my phone does have a camera on it. And it's really, they take really nice pictures. So you have like legitimately good stuff like
yep.
in your phone right now that could be on your wall.
Yeah.
But you find these other things to be kind of a challenge or an obstacle. And so I had one of my very favorite pictures of Clara made into a canvas. Two wonderful things about this. A, it looks fantastic. Like yeah. it looks like a piece of art.
Super high quality.
Yes. Really high quality. The other thing I love about it is it's light. So mm-hmm. you can really hang it on like a single hook. You don't really mm-hmm. have to worry about having some elaborate, you know, system on your wall
right.
with hangers and stuff.
Yep.
It really hangs really easily. They also prop really easily.
Yes, I was going to say, yeah. I love a propped frame.
Yes.
Only because so, it's easy to be lazy.
It's easy. So when I moved into my new house, one of the very first things I put up on a bookshelf, because I just wanted some, I don't have a lot of wall space. And I put Clara's Canvas People picture on, I just propped it on top of like a little stack of books and then put some other, you know, like some pottery that the kids made around it. And I felt like it just made the, like
yeah.
it pulled everything together. And that's actually now my Facebook cover photo.
I know. It
is that
look
picture
so
of Claire with all the other stuff.
Nice. And I totally agree. I think just a photo canvas added to some other decor or other, you know, mixing and matching with other things you've got going on your wall is such a kind of bright and clean and modern look. And yeah, get the photos off the phone, people. You guys aren't going to believe this offer. I mean, all our sponsors bring great offers, but this is a really, really
good
offer.
This is really good, yeah.
So with our code, you're going to get an 11x14 Canvas People print for free. And all you do is pay the shipping and handling. So that's a $69.99 value for free.
Wow. That's, yeah.
You heard that correctly, guys. So you go to canvaspeople.com. You upload your photo first, and then you'll have the chance to enter the promo code once it's all uploaded and you could see how it looks. And the promo code is MOMHOUR. So again, canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, and then enter the code MOMHOUR, and you'll get that 11x14 for free when you just pay shipping and handling. Amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Do it.
Do it, guys.
Yeah.
I kind of want another one. I did get one, but
I was actually just thinking about what I would get for
yeah.
my next one. Yeah.
Okay, guys. So our first question comes from Rachel. Rachel's been a longtime listener, and I have to give her a shout out just because she's been so supportive of the show. I think I even was connected to Rachel way back in my blogging days. And so we've kind of followed each other online, but just a really, really supportive listener of the show. Sends in great ideas, gives us great feedback. And all of you guys who've been around from the beginning and kind of love us anyway, we just appreciate that. So we're going to play Rachel's question and it'll speak for itself. So we'll do that now.
Hey, Megan and Sarah, this is Rachel. I have a question about how to deal with my somewhat shy four-year-old. And I don't know, I don't love the word shy, but I guess it's the best thing to describe, best word to use to describe him. And the situations where I'm most concerned are, for example, we go to the gym often and we're leaving the gym childcare, and the teachers there or the workers there will say, okay, thanks, buddy, see you later. And I would love it if he would say thank you or acknowledge their existence in some way. But he just is very like put off by the fact that they're talking to him, and he'll bury his head in my shirt, or he'll just turn and walk away. And, you know, if I say something like, hey, buddy, say thank you, he absolutely won't. And I can't force him to say thank you. And so I pretty much just stopped trying to make him say thank you. And what I do is I just say, okay, yep. And he says thank you, or something like that, kind of me being the voice of this is how you should handle the situation. I just think that his shyness sometimes comes off as rude, and yes, he's four, and I know people understand that, but how do I teach him that, like, no, it's the way it's supposed to be. You need to say thank you. You need to look at people when they talk to you. I will also add that I have a six-year-old, my other, and just one other child, and he's six, and he's never met an adult that he did not want to talk to. So that's where I'm coming from. Extremes, opposite ends of the spectrum, for sure. I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss, so I could use a little help. Thanks.
Okay, Rachel. I really love this topic, actually. And it's interesting that she brought up the specific instance she mentioned about, like, the gym childcare and seeing adults that the child sees regularly and is still feeling a little shy around, I think brings up a really interesting side to this. So I guess if I'm going to start big picture, I really think that most quote unquote shy or reserved or introverted kids are just developmentally not there yet, where they're just not ready to be social in the way that adults are social. And we have such weird expectations of kids acting like mini adults. So I would say, if I had to answer this question in 30 seconds, I would say, be patient, be an advocate, and be on the side of your child, and don't worry about forcing them into adult niceties. That's if I had to just give a sentence, that's what it would be. But
well, can we quickly just differentiate? Because I like that Rachel said she doesn't love the word shy, because she doesn't know that it actually is even fitting what's going on here. And I think there's a difference between a kid who's like afraid of people or doesn't want to be away from mom, and a kid who just doesn't care that we're supposed to say, like, not even doesn't care, just doesn't understand yet why we're supposed to do, like, the social contract. Like, those are two very different things. And this same kid could be, the minute mom turns around and leaves and he's just playing, could be super friendly. You don't really know. It could be awkwardness
and
around
some,
those.
Yes. And some kids are more comfortable with other kids, peers, and some are more comfortable with adults and are more socially awkward with peers. So all of it developmentally, for most developmentally on track kids, kind of sorts itself out. I definitely don't think Rachel has anything to be concerned about. But I do think, so the thing that I think is interesting is she brought up a situation where they're going to gym childcare and he's familiar with these same teachers and they're seeing them every day. And they say, okay, bye, thanks. And he doesn't say anything. So I think there's a couple ways to handle that. One is to just do exactly what she's doing, which is modeling. I'm a big fan of modeling the behavior you want your kids to do. And they're not going to do it that day, but eventually they will. So if someone said something to my shy kid and the kid wasn't going to respond, I would just respond. I wouldn't make a big deal, but I'd just say, oh, so nice to see you too. Thanks for having us. Bye.
Right.
As opposed to say thank you for having us. Say bye.
Say now.
Right. So modeling, and she's already doing that, and that's really good. But the other thing I think, and he's four, is that if you think your kid is ready to get a little bit out of their comfort zone and practice some of these social graces, and I think four is maybe a little young, but especially if this were, like, say, a 6 or 7 year old who really was still kind of having trouble, you know, responding or looking down or making eye contact. And we've talked about this before, Megan, with both of our introverted kids, is it's not, it's great to give a little pep talk before a social situation and have them practice those things in a situation where they are comfortable, where you're not asking them to go into a room full of people they don't know and shake hands with everybody. But maybe you say, hey, buddy, we're going to go to the gym today and let's play a game where we practice making eye contact when somebody says hello. And I think there's little opportunities to do that, especially in this case where it's teachers he knows and is familiar with. And so it's probably the lowest barrier to entry. But I think it takes the pressure off your kid if you have that pep talk beforehand and just say, hey, let's practice that a little bit today. Or if they do it once, then after they're out of the room or after you leave, say, oh, wow, I really noticed, you know, that you were super kind and respectful or whatever it was with when someone was speaking to you. So you're reinforcing the behavior, but you're not putting them on the spot every time.
Right. I totally agree. And that works with so many different behavioral and just life things, right? Yes. It's like that whole like model and then notice. Yes. Don't like point out the negative that they didn't do it, but just reinforce that when they did it. Right. And it is the kind of thing, I think you're right, that like most kids figure out when they get to be 6 or 7 and they start to realize there's that social contract and like they understand it. Before that, they're just like living, they call like 7 the age of reason, right? Like where they really start to be more in tune with what's happening outside of themselves. And before that, it's like they're kind of they're very self-focused. Yeah. Like that's kind of the whole point of being a kid. They're not thinking really that the other person expects it or why that might be. It doesn't make logical sense to them because in their world, it's not a thing. So it's,
I totally agree. And a couple more thoughts that I had is the teachers at the gym childcare are most likely not noticing your son's lack of response in the way that you are.
We
talked about that recently in our opting out episode is we're hyper aware of our own behavior and our kids' behavior. But they're saying that because they genuinely want to say goodbye to him and because they're adults who know how to be social. They're not keeping a tally of the kids who say thank you unprompted and the kids.
Yeah, this isn't like going. Yeah, this isn't going like against you in some ledger, right?
No,
yeah.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I'm not super consistent about whether or not I remind my kids to say thank you and goodbye. Sometimes I do it and sometimes I don't. And it depends kind of on if I can do it kind of sneakily and just kind of like elbow, like, hey, manners, if it's really important to me, if depending on the who it is, I might remind them. I might not. A lot of times they remember because they're getting older and a lot of times they don't. So I don't think it's one of those things where you have to like pick your philosophy and stick to it forever. But I think you can definitely be patient with a 4-year-old. And Rachel also said in the end of her message that she has a really outgoing 6-year-old.
And so that's what she's used to.
Yes. And that's so true. And I know you have experienced this too, Megan, is when you have something to compare to, it makes those differences makes you hyper aware of the differences.
You know, and even if you're not consistent about asking or ensuring that every single time they do it, they're always going to see that you always do it. So
yes,
if you just if the only thing you ever do is model, I think that's like half of the battle there, because they're going to see the way you do things and eventually they're going to get the picture. Like they're learning by watching you, even if they're not enacting it yet.
I agree. 100%. All right. Okay. Should we take another one? So Megan, I'm going to put you on the spot if you don't mind.
Okay. What do I
have
to do?
Emailed this. So if you don't mind reading it to us.
Oh, I can read. That works out. Yeah. Okay. It's like, I didn't know what you had for me. Like, I don't know. Put me on the spot here. I'm not sure.
Yep.
Okay. That is totally fine. Okay. So she says, hello, my name is Amber. I live in Ohio with my husband and 1-year-old son. We're a very blue collar family and always live paycheck to paycheck. Both myself and my husband work full time. My husband's a mechanic and myself at my son's child care center. My question is, do you have any tips or ideas on lowering monthly expenses such as a grocery bill? I'm terrible at budgeting for the grocery store and I do not. Did you see that? What I just did? I said grocery the first time and grocery the second time. So guys, like 2 episodes ago, maybe we had a whole conversation about whether we pronounce it grocery or grocery. And it turns out I go back and forth. So
I think we both do. And many of our listeners wrote to us because you guys like to call us out on this stuff. That's so funny. Sorry, Amber.
Okay. So sorry, Amber. She asks, I am terrible at budgeting for the grocery store and I don't have time to clip coupons for hours. Any suggestions of episodes to listen to would be appreciated. And then some very sweet things. Thank you for being you. Your podcast helped me a lot as a brand new mom. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Okay. So grocery budgets.
I feel like you have things to say.
I have some things. Yes, I do. The first thing I would say is really get a check on, like, really pay attention, close attention to your food waste. If I had to say one thing, the one thing I could do to get my grocery bill under control, it is to make sure I'm not throwing any food away or very, very little. And that is something I have struggled with a lot over the years because my family size has fluctuated, a lot. And as kids grow, their needs change and the way you cook might be changing, right? So That's where I would start. I would really closely monitor what you're eating in a week and what's not being used up. I would just pay attention for a week, because I'm guessing if you're like me and like a lot of moms, you're overbuying.
Yeah.
Just like that. And that's one thing that is just totally unnecessary spending.
Yeah.
I have actually found that in times when I'm wasting too much food or spending too much, it's often because I'm actually not shopping enough, which I know totally goes against all of the things that we're supposed to do, which we're supposed to buy everything in bulk because it's cheaper. Right. That's not necessarily the case. And if you're buying too much food, again, you're going to not, everything's not going to get eaten. And your bills are going to be higher, which, I mean, yes, theoretically, if you're buying your grocery shopping like once a month, and if you can do that, and there are people who do that, and that's like a job. Let me just be really clear that the people who get their grocery bills down like really, really like ridiculously low.
Yeah.
I know people who do this. I know it can be done, but it is like a part-time job. It is not something you do between, you know, like coming home from work and making dinner or whatever. You know, it's not something you just fit in when you can, and you can definitely get better at it, but I think it is something that requires a lot of time. So maybe just don't be too hard on yourself about that bill, that particular bill. I don't know, Sarah, I'm like going on and on.
Do you have anything else to add that? I kicked this to you because I feel like you have talked or written about this a fair amount. I do have a couple of things. So there is an episode in our archives. It's episode 55. So it's exactly, almost exactly 2 years old. It's from June 15th, 2016. It's called Saving Money on Groceries and Household Supplies. So Amber, you can go listen to that from the archives. And we actually talk about how we're not couponers either. So I think we're in the same boat as you.
Yeah.
But a couple other tips that I thought of. One is more on the household supplies and less on the groceries. But I think Amber mentioned that too. Is avoid shopping for those things at places where you're going to be tempted into impulse purchases. I don't want to call out Target, but I'm going to call out Target.
No, totally.
I mean, that's what it would be for me. So like, I went through a long phase where I really, even though we love Target, I just almost never went to Target because it was too tempting to then also get myself some new makeup.
Oh,
and like,
yes, totally.
So, like, let's say we're talking about paper towels, toilet paper, you know, dishwasher detergent, that kind of stuff. I had a pretty good beat for a while on where those things were economically priced. And for me, a lot of it came from Costco's generic brand. And so I only got those things at Costco. I only went to Costco once or twice a month. Costco can get you into overbuying and impulse purchasing too, but I had three little kids and like, I didn't really want to be spending time in Costco. I wasn't going to buy like a tent or something.
Right.
I mean, I think some people can go to Costco and accidentally spend a bunch of money, but that wasn't the way I used it. I went there because I knew that peanut butter, coffee, organic eggs, chicken stock. It's like I have 12 things that are so much cheaper at Costco that I cannot bear buying them anywhere else. It was like I had found those 12 things. And so that helped. But also not going to Target for, like, if I was out of low on toilet paper or paper towels, I would not run to Target because it just
absolutely
is too tempting.
A lot of that stuff, I think, it's really wise to buy online, because if you can lock in your price, like on Amazon or something, if you can like really lock in it, it's easy to forget like what's the best deal you can get on, say, 12 packs of toilet paper, because the sales are all over the place.
Right.
Like you'll go in and see the sale and you're like, oh my gosh, this seems like a good deal, but is it? I don't remember how much it cost last time. So paying attention to that stuff and comparison shopping and then looking at prices online, I think is really helpful.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Another tip I was going to offer is not running out of things. So like we tend to spend more on things if we accidentally run out at the last minute.
Yep.
And I think you were sort of going there with food too, but especially with household items, it's always going to be cheaper if you are planning ahead. And I think that comes kind of naturally to me. Like I just notice when we're getting low on something.
Yeah.
And I really don't like running out to stores at the last minute. But if you need a little system, a little post-it note, a little, you know, notes file in your phone, or a little some way to indicate when you're running low, I think you really save a lot of money by not needing to run out at the last minute for that kind of thing.
Another tip I would have, I didn't realize I'd have so many, but one thing I would say is really simplify your menu planning. Figure out what those like 5 or 6 or 7 dishes are that you can make relatively inexpensively every time. And that's not going to always, that doesn't always mean you're going to be using, here's an example. One of the cheapest meals that I make that my family will eat the entire thing, so there's no waste, is literally I buy a bag of frozen stir fry vegetables, which is like $2. And chicken breasts, which are you know, whatever they are, because mm-hmm. they're all over the place, depending if they're on sale or not, and like a little sauce. Mm-hmm. That's it. But it feeds everybody, right? So it's a bag, like those vegetables, if I bought them all fresh and chopped them up, would probably cost more because mm-hmm. not all of them would be in season, you know? So sometimes like that's like frozen vegetables can be really an economical way of doing that kind of thing. I would also say find the cheapest proteins you can that align with whatever your personal food values are. So like mm-hmm. if you feel like it's really important to eat organic meats or free range meats or whatever, then you might have to be thinking carefully about what kind of meat you're going to eat, because that mm-hmm. stuff gets expensive no matter what. On the other hand, if you're okay, like there's all kinds of in between labels. Like there's all kinds of range from like factory farmed cows
yeah.
on up to like the happiest of yep. cows skipping through an organic farm with no fences. Like there's some different stops between mm-hmm. and there's cuts that are pretty cheap. Like I will do a pork butt, or also called a pork shoulder. That's like a huge slab of meat. You can make meals yep. for days out of that. So like whatever protein you can get, or maybe for you, all of the meats are like too much. And look at eggs or mm-hmm. beans. Like there's a lots of those proteins are the things that always make my bill. Like if there's one variable that causes the biggest swing on my food bill, it's meat.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep.
Because it's all over the place. And so yep. figuring out some really simple meal plans, that center around the least expensive protein you'll tolerate. Yep. And that's like, yeah, that's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And then my final tip is, I don't know, because I don't know any more about Amber's family or how much she's budgeting or looking at things, but just tracking expenses. And there's so many different yeah. tools, but just paying attention to something is often a huge leap forward in just facing reality. And sometimes it surprises you what you are spending a lot of money on and what not. And one thing yes. about feeling bad or guilty or, you know, short on cash is if we don't know what's budgeted and what we're typically spending in a month, it's hard to yep. know, like, should I feel guilty about spending $200 at the grocery store? Or maybe that's the reality to feed my family and I need to make cuts elsewhere in the budget. Does that make sense? So just yeah. having an awareness. And I think there's so many good tools to help you kind of track that for a few months and really yeah. look at where the money's going.
Yes. And if right now, like for me, my budget, my grocery budget, I'm putting groceries in air quotes, includes things like toiletries and stuff, because not like my makeup and things, but just like basic yeah. household, like toothpaste
yeah.
and
yeah.
paper towels and stuff like that. Just because for me, I really wanted to simplify. But if I was really trying to get down to the nitty gritty right now of what I'm spending money on, I would absolutely be separating that stuff out for
it's
sure.
Kind of, because it's kind of like you can really geek out over it if you want.
You
I have yeah. in the past. And then, you know, you go through phases where you don't want to or you don't need to care. But that's helpful, I think. It's always helpful.
Yeah.
I'm married yeah. to a financial planner, so.
Yes, and sometimes really just digging down into the nuts and bolts really helps. Yeah. The last thing I would say is try Aldi if you've got it and you haven't already tried it. It's really a great, like, I'm always shocked by how much less my bill is. And you might be surprised by the, if you don't have an Aldi in your area, or even if you do, you might be surprised by which grocery stores cost more at certain things and which cost less. Like it might not be the bigger store that
Agreed.
Saves you the money. It might
I know
be
that's...
like the little corner store, which is weird. And you think it'll be overpriced, but depending how you shop it,
yep.
it's not always the case.
Well, and I know that's true about Costco because I like Costco, but it's like things are all over the map. Some things are ridiculously cheaper. Some things are the same, and some things are
yes.
more expensive. So you do kind of have to know. There are entire blogs and bloggers devoted to this kind of stuff. Like I've clicked on things before, like 10 things that are not cheaper at Costco. And I'm like, ooh,
right.
I want to know what those are. So definitely you can have fun doing some research on that.
Well, and I know people like I work the point system at both CVS and Walgreens. And for things like paper towels and stuff like that, or like our town, like kind of our area, the Great Lakes states have a chain called Meijer, which uh-huh. is basically like a look like a semi local regional Walmart kind of,
yep.
I guess. It's a big box store with groceries. So, and even at our Meijer store, there's something called M Perks, but whatever it is, like a lot of these places have these point systems.
Yeah.
And if you're really good at working those, you can do super well, but probably not on everything. You're going to do like M Perks, for example. I used to use it a lot and I noticed like certain brands will come up again and again, and you could do really, really well with those branded foods and like not so well with others. And you weren't going to do any better on meats and produce. It just wasn't going to be a thing.
Right.
But like if you had to go in and buy a bunch of shredded cheese, you could do awesome on shredded yeah. cheese. So if you can like figure out one or two to really work those point systems, I just think you have to figure out the like one or two you're really going to
yeah.
work, because you really can't play them all.
And having a menu plan like you started talking about, I think really helps with that.
Yes.
And so, I mean, we could get off topic, but we recently did an episode on meal planning and stuff too. And that's all, it's all tied in. Because if you have a simple meal plan and menu plan, then you can sort of be strategic about your shopping without it, like, without it becoming your full-time job, like we talked about with coupons.
Yeah, exactly. That. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break to talk about our next sponsor. Megan, you want to set this up? Well,
this is so on point right now. So our sponsor is HelloFresh, which is a meal kit delivery service. So HelloFresh shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes, but also the food right to your front door.
Yeah.
It's so convenient because you will come home and there's going to be like an entire meal sitting in a little box on your stoop if you've been at work, or maybe they'll come and deliver it to you during the day. And you know when it's coming and everything is labeled. So like there's all these little boxes, like they look like little takeout boxes, and everything for that meal is in that box. So you don't have to worry about, you know, like how it is when you bring groceries home and you have to put everything away and figure out, like I try to group things by meal in my fridge so that I don't lose things in the fridge. This already comes done like that. So it's, if you're like a working mom or just busy, maybe it's like your kids are in a really heavy sports season right now or something.
Or brand new mom. Like
or brand new mom.
Yeah.
It's so convenient. And I love that we actually just talked a little bit about budgeting, because interestingly enough, I have found that judicious use of food delivery can actually be a really important part of a food budget, which sounds a little weird because you'd think it would cost more. But if think of it this way, if it keeps you from going through the drive-thru, if it keeps you from having to run to the store at the last minute and just grab whatever you see because you're so starving, you just need to make something, it will save you money.
Absolutely.
So I have found for sure that if it's like, maybe not an everyday thing or an every week thing, but if I just know that I have a week where I really don't have to worry too much about, you know, planning the meals, shopping for the meals, and it's all going to be delivered to me, those actually work out better for me money-wise than it would to do the grocery shopping myself. It's maybe a little counterintuitive, but it really does work.
I can totally see that. So HelloFresh has three plans to choose from, classic, veggie, and family, and you can look forward to your delivery knowing that dinner is done. It's not done.
I'm getting it on Monday. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it just got that much easier. One thing I love, since I have younger kids and some picky kids, is they're really gourmet meals, but recipes like the mushu pork tacos we had were really easily deconstructed, so I could pull some of the meat and like a tortilla for my super picky kids. But then my husband and I had a super gourmet meal, even more gourmet than I would have come up with on my own. But everybody ate. It was amazing.
And I love that they put a little, they kind of elevate a really basic recipe. So the ones that has probably gone over the best with my family have been the stuffed peppers, which, I mean, I've known about stuffed peppers my whole life. This is not something I've never made before, but their recipe just elevated it a little bit. The ingredients were a little more interesting than the ones I'd used before. So now it's like, I know that's something that I can make anytime. And maybe it just like kind of inspired me to try something a little different. So it was great. It's really easy to choose your delivery date. So if your schedule changes, you can always pause it for when you're on vacation or whatever, or if you just need to like move it from one week to the next. And honestly, it's way more affordable than you would think. So it's less than $10 per serving and shipping is free. And, you know, consider that that means you're getting like restaurant quality meals for way less than you would pay.
And really ample portions, because we have leftovers, which is then, you know, saving money on lunches the next day for my husband or whatever.
Yes, we have definitely had leftovers almost every time we've used it. So it's going to get even more affordable because we're going to give you $30 off your first week. So for your first week of HelloFresh, just go to HelloFresh.com/MomHour30. Again, that's HelloFresh.com/MomHour30 and enter MomHour30 in the, you know, place where you put your promo code.
Yep.
And you're going to get $30 off your first week, which is a great deal.
Love it. Yes. I'm really hungry now, actually.
Actually, me too. I'm thinking about those stuffed peppers. I wish I had HelloFresh today.
So we're going to keep going here. We have one more question and, you know, it's kind of a big one, I think. So we'll take our time with it. But it comes from Michelle and we will play it now.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. This is Michelle. I have two kids, an 8-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter. How do you help your children learn to deal with frustration? I wasn't great with this when my son was little, and now he's very smart and very talented. And when things just don't go his way, he has a hard time dealing with that frustration. He gets very upset. He starts crying. He's pounding his fist. He's not willing to persevere. So how do I teach him that? And how do I help my 3-nager little girl who's learning these big, who has these big emotions and needs to learn to deal with them now. How do I help her so she knows how to deal with them earlier and I don't have to go through this again with my, when she's 7 or 8? Thanks for putting on such a great podcast. I look forward to listening to you every week and I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Thanks.
Okay, Michelle. Well, thank you for this question. Michelle actually sent us 2 questions, but we're taking the first one today. And this is really, really common. The first thing I want to say is having 3 kids, and Megan, you have 5 kids. I just believe that the way kids handle disappointment and frustration and their ability to mature in that area. I mean, we all experience disappointment and frustration. So it's not like those things are ever going to go away, but the way we handle it is wildly different across my 3 kids. Yeah. I have 2 hotheads and they're hotheaded in different ways. And then one who's unusually reasonable and mature. So one thing is just to know that there's a big wide range of normal here. Mm-hmm. And I think, so she mentioned her son is 8, and I also have an 8-year-old son, and I have an 8-year-old son who's really, he has come so far in this area. It's not easy for him. He doesn't deal well with frustration. He's very inflexible when things don't go his way. And I do think 7 or 8 is that age where you start to notice when your kid is still throwing fits and other kids aren't.
Yes.
I don't know. Do you remember that, Megan, with any of your kids? Like, I feel like 4 or 5 and even 6-year-olds, it's kind of normal to see a kid crying over something.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking in the last year or two, like, all right, my kid is crying possibly more than his peers at certain things. So I don't know if that happened to you.
You know, what's interesting for me is, like, I will say my ragiest kid, like the one who's the most frustrated, is Owen.
Mm-hmm.
To my memory, you know, Isaac was like, Isaac's toddlerhood is a blur. Honestly, like, he was so, like, I hate the word naughty, but it's like the only word I can really think of for him.
Yeah.
He was like a stinker, you know? But that had started to fade by 7 or 8. So probably it was Owen. And Owen has always manifested his frustration in really odd and disturbing ways. like when he was 3, he would just come stand by me and glare at me and headbutt me silently, like a silent headbutt. Now you might think that's better than a kid having a tantrum, but actually I would be like, what is wrong with what's wrong with this kid? He is just, and he could have gone all day. Like his tolerance, or what's the word I'm looking for? His endurance for a fit.
Yeah.
Just lasted forever. Yeah. And it would just, like, he would stand there and just take 2 steps back and then headbutt me and then take 2 steps back and then headbutt me. He did that till he was like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And then it kind of started to morph into arguments.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a little lawyer and he's really good at mounting a very illogical, but a very, like, you know, I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is, just consistent, consistently irrational.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just, again, with the endurance, like, he won't quit. Like, it's just so. And then he's also like a rage quitter. So he's like the kid who would get mad about a game not going well and rage quit.
Yeah.
But it would be like a silent rage quit. So I guess my point is just to say that, like, your kid might be the one crying and freaking out and screaming or whatever, or pounding his fists, and that sticks disturbing to you. But I bet you on the other side of the playground, there's a mom whose kid is like silently like stabbing
or afraid to try, like, who's not even, you know, not even engaging because they're stuck in some other place on the continuum.
Okay. Or like Clara is a good example of that. She gets very, very, very frustrated, and her way, because of, she's got anxiety and stuff, and so her way of, like, dealing with that is to kind of she over apologizes. Mm-hmm. And then she worries, and she actually makes this sound, and I've told her, like, honey, you make this sound like you're gonna cry. And it's like, you know, like, it's like this little reaction she's having where she's expressing fear and frustration.
Yeah.
So I guess my point is, it can happen silently too. That's like my only really point of telling you all this is how differently it manifests from kid to kid.
And hopefully we're normalizing this. I think an 8-year-old is still very, very much learning how to handle frustration.
Yes.
I guess I'll offer a couple specific tactics. One, because I do feel like Reed has improved so much with this. One is, I mean, we kind of touched on this at the top of the show, with noticing when they are making progress. I really, with all my kids and their various issues, I really try and, like, zoom out every once in a while and be like, okay, this is better than it was 6 months ago, or better than it was a year ago. And both for my own self to be like, okay, I think we're making progress. This is a kid who has a particularly hard time in this area, but If I zoom out, the overall trajectory is we're maturing, we're developing.
It's happening. It's happening.
And so
maybe
and
more
I
slowly
really,
than we'd like, but it's happening.
I really compliment Reed when he's able to switch gears, be flexible, and not get frustrated with something. And so compliment them when they are making progress and notice when they're making progress, because it also helps you internally and it helps them, I think.
Another thing is
to look at what that kid is facing during the day and just maybe do a little gut check of, are they in a phase where things really are extra hard in too many different areas? So what I mean by that is, like, I think it's really good for kids to be challenged and pushed in certain areas. But if school got harder this year and sports got harder this year and the three-nager
social stuff
got harder and the little sister is extra needy and demanding and dad is traveling more or whatever, then, like, maybe there are ways to, like, set him up for success where some of the things he does are just, they're gimmies. They're not gonna create frustration because they're easy and he gets to feel successful. I've done a fair amount of reading on, you know, kids and resilience and, you know, like, these types of topics, and it's something I love talking about, but they both need to be stretched and challenged, but they also need to feel successful. So it's, you get to look at that as a picture and be like, okay, where can we just help this kid feel really, really successful? Or does he need more sleep? Or does he need like one fewer activity or whatever it is? So I don't know. That was a couple more thoughts.
Well, and one thing I will also say, and I think this is all fantastic advice. And I know just because I just described all of the different ways that my kids have been, have expressed their frustration and how different it is from kid to kid, I think there's a real tendency, and I'm totally guilty of this, of being like, well, there goes the waterworks again, or like, oh, there goes little Bobby little Bobby.
Yes.
And you start to fall into this pattern sometimes where you just you expect and anticipate. And then when it happens, you react in a, like, just another day with this kid kind of a way, even if you have no intention to, and it's not a purposeful thing in any way. And of course you don't mean to make your kid feel bad, and you would never purposely, like, reinforce a behavior. But sometimes we do that because we're frustrated, we're tired, or, like,
I do it.
Throw a tantrum.
I still do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that there's, like, that's such a normal reaction, but, like, I mean, I think there's something to keeping, like, an element, like, somehow preserving that element of surprise when your kid does something that seems like not to get too, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, too much, like, oh, just another day.
Yep.
Where you stop paying attention to those triggers and you just are already on guard. Like, you know, you get that edge. Like, when moms are always anticipating, right?
Yep.
So we go into a situation, we're scanning the room. We're anticipating what our family is going to do.
Yep.
And sometimes, like, you know, you can kind of see what's coming, like little sister's bugging big brother or the food. You know, you're at a gathering and the food is not what your kid's going to want.
And you know it's coming.
You know it's coming. And you're
2.
Yes.
1.
And you're bracing yourself and you don't even allow yourself, like, the opportunity to be surprised negatively or positively.
Yep.
Like, you don't allow yourself that opportunity, and we all do it. So it's not like, I'm not saying, like, oh, you know, don't do that and everything's going to be better. I guess I would just say, watch for that. Like, your kid can surprise you.
I totally agree. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I do have one more quick thing. And that is, this takes so much practice, so much practice, but you can be calm and happy and even having a good time when your kid is raging and super frustrated.
Yes, you don't have to take that on yourself.
You don't. And you can be empathetic and you can get down with him for a minute and say, this is so frustrating for you. Can I help you find a different activity? Can I help redirect you? But then you can get up and walk away and say, let me know if you need my help. I'm going to go do my own thing now. So that's so hard. It's so hard not to be dragged down completely emotionally right into their stuff. Or the alternative is sort of to be really callous and, like, ignore. And so, like, somewhere in the middle is, like, you can let them know that you're available to help and you're empathetic to what they're going through, and everybody gets frustrated. You know, I think another good thing to do is kind of narrate when you have had a frustrating experience and be like, man, I was so frustrated because I almost ran out of gas and I was running late, and just, you know, and just kind of talk through that stuff. But you don't have to live in that place with them all the time. Like, you get to walk away and it's okay to be happy. And
could not agree more. And I just also want to say, like, in public situations, I think that can be especially powerful.
Yes.
Because there's such a tendency to want to fix or like show everyone that you're fixing or show everyone
that
you're reacting.
Yeah, like do that thing where you parent in a really loud voice so everyone knows.
Yeah, so everyone knows you're parenting because you don't want anyone to know that, like, to think that you don't handle things. But I think when I have allowed myself to demonstrate that balance of empathizing and caring and loving, but also walking away and still going back to what I'm doing in my conversation, and I have done so much as to pick up a tantruming child and move them to a place where they can tantrum without bothering other people.
Right.
In a very loving way, but it's like, I'm going to put you over here now because you're being really loud or whatever it is. And like the other parents, you know, there might be a little discomfort at first, but like the more other people see you being really confident and just handling it kindly, but firmly and kind of nonchalantly, I feel like it diffuses the situation and it makes other people comfortable. Like I really do. And I've witnessed that over and over. Yes. Like people will kind of give you this weird look and say like, oh, well, you're pretty confident. Yeah. I've gotten a lot of comments
like that. You feel so much better after that situation has passed than you do when, you know, you do any of the other things that we've all done.
Overreact, like, freak out, leave the party because like your kid can't, you know, is like freaking out. And then you feel like you have to leave. And then you get home and think, well, now, like, I cut my evening short because of something totally normal, like a very normal thing that my kid would have gotten over.
Right.
You know, so. I don't know, doesn't always work. I know there are kids who are super persistent in their tantrums. And sometimes it is leaving the shopping cart full in the middle of the grocery store aisle is the right choice. But that's your decision to make, like what you can tolerate. But sometimes letting your kid have the tantrum and going about your business is also the right choice. And sometimes that can come off as like a really confident and almost comforting choice to other people. And so I would just say try not to worry too much about like the public parenting thing. I think that's one of the thing I come back to a time and time again, that I feel like if I could go back and change one thing that I did as a younger mom, it would be having less of my parenting decisions be ruled by how I felt other people thought about me in the moment.
Yep. Well, that kind of transitions into, we hadn't touched on the fact that Michelle also has a three-nager, a little girl. And, you know, what she said when she sent this question was that she felt like she didn't handle this as well with her now 8-year-old. And I would say it's probably more likely that your 8-year-old just has a particularly hard time with dealing with frustration. It's not that you did anything wrong. And your 3-nager has big emotions because she's 3. So
I don't think there's anything she can do to head it off at the pass.
I don't think so, except that just have a lot of patience with yourself because 3-year-olds are crazy. So like you can help her deal with big emotions, which I think is how you phrased it in the question, by doing all the things we've talked about, like helping her, setting her up for success, making sure that, you know, she's doing things that are developmentally appropriate. She's not, because 3-year-olds are crazy. They want to do everything by themselves and they can't. And that's like a constant dance. So I don't know that, I don't think you need to think about it like, what can I do better with her so that she is not like this? I think her son sounds like he's just wired that way. And there's a lot of great things. He's probably a little bit of a perfectionist. He's probably really driven. There's some things that will probably help him by having those traits. And there's some things that are going to be hard. That's how it works, right? Like, so, but I don't have a lot else to say about three-nagers, except that, yes, they get super frustrated. They want to do everything by themselves and they're completely irrational. So I'd almost spend my energy.
So the more you can do, the more you can do to set your life up and like to set yourself up for success, really the better. Like the more you can do to, you feel good about what's, you know, happening and like you tolerate it, I think is kind of the solution to all that stuff, right?
I totally agree. And make sure you have lots of room to take breaks. Because if you have a raging 7 or 8-year-old and a 3-nager, then you need a little break. But yeah, I really relate to this one a lot because of my little guy. Mm. All right, Megan. Well, next week we're going to take 3 more of these questions.
Nice.
But before we wrap up, we got to do our end of show segment, which is Cue It Up. And what I thought I would do for Cue It Up is just tell you guys that I think our listener questions episodes are some of the best ways to get to know us if you're new to this podcast.
I totally agree. And there's some of, honestly, they're my favorite.
They are. They're fun for us to do, but they also, what they do, 2 things. They allow us to be a little more opinionated than we are in our regular episodes because somebody has asked us for our opinion. So in our regular episodes, we paint a pretty broad brush of like, it's going to be okay no matter what and all of that. But if someone with a very specific challenge asks us for our opinion, I think we're allowed to be a little more opinionated. So that's
absolutely
fun. But also we cover a lot of different topics and a lot of different age ranges in a relatively short period of time. So if you're one listener wrote that she had dated, quote unquote, dated a lot of mom podcasts and like she chose us. So if you're dating around and you're not sure if this podcast is for you, go listen to our listener questions episodes.
Agreed.
I'm going to read out just a couple of episode numbers so you can scroll back and find them. And then I'll link to all these in the show notes at themomhour.com. But if you're back at the beginning, near the beginning, episode 41, 52, 65, 73. So go check those out. I'm not going to read it anymore because you guys will lose me. But 41, 52, 65, and those are all from 2016. And you'll just hear so many different types of questions and our responses. And I think it's a fun way to get to know us. So that's my cue it up. Those are the ones I would cue up if you are new and haven't listened to more of these types of episodes.
Very fun.
Yeah, that's all I got. So we'll be back with you guys next week with more great questions and our advice.
Hopefully my voice will be back by then.
Yeah, it will.
I'm fading out now.
All right, bye guys.
Thanks guys.